This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders. My name is Chris Brown. I'm the host of the Leadership Momentum Podcast. If you're new to this podcast, the heart of it is to either equip you, to empower you, or just to encourage you. And for us around here, a slam dunk is to do all three. Our desire is that you'll hear something on this podcast that'll ultimately give you hope that you can reach that next goal. You know, those goals that feel out of our reach, that you can reach those goals. So we want to help you with that in any way that we can. On this podcast, I sit down with Nick Vujicic. That's exactly how you say it. A lot of us say Nick Vujicic, but it's Nick Vujicic. I have been corrected by Nick himself in regards to his last name, but we all know him as the guy who has no arms and legs, and he travels the world and preaches the gospel. What? Did you hear what I just said? And many of us listening in are in the middle of doing something, right? We're doing something. We're filling out paperwork, or we're in the middle of a meeting, and we're checking email at the same time. But there's a chance that that didn't settle in. Nick Vujicic travels the world spreading the gospel and has no arms and no legs. I don't know about you, but just saying that twice. Now, my perspective regarding my daily junk, well, it just got adjusted pretty significantly. I don't know what you're dealing with today. I don't know what you're dealing with this week. But my guess is that it's a lot easier with arms and legs. So as you can imagine, getting through his daily life, daily ministry, what would that be like? What would that be like with no hands, no legs, no arms? And many of us, you know, we start our complaining if we have a sore throat before we speak, right? I mean, picture your life without the ability to walk, to take the dog out, to even put on your microphone before you speak, to brush your teeth, or how about to give your spouse a hug, right? Well, let me tell you a little bit about Nick's story, and that'll help kind of give us some context for this conversation. Without any medical explanation or warning, Nick was born in 1982 in Australia without any arms and without any legs. According to Nick, the victory over his struggle has been his passion for life, his passion for Jesus, his faith. It all comes down to that. And since his first speaking engagement at the age of 19, Nick has traveled around the country, traveled around the world, sharing his story with millions, literally millions of people, sometimes in packed stadiums. Y'all, the guy has accomplished more already than most have accomplished in a lifetime. And again, he has no limbs. He's an author. He's a musician. He's an actor. And his hobbies, y'all, my mind is blown right now. His hobbies are fishing, visualize that, painting, and swimming. Yeah, Google the pics, Google the videos. You can see him swimming. Very, very inspiring stuff. Well, when he's not swimming, he's also president of the international nonprofit ministry Life Without Limbs. And Nick says, if God can use a man without any arms and legs to be his hands and feet, then he'll certainly use any willing heart. So I don't know where you're at today, what you're dealing with as a church leader or as a leader in the marketplace. Let that be an encouragement to you. And through all the frustration of all this work with no legs, he's known for often saying, if just one person, one more person finds eternal life in Jesus Christ, it's all worth it. And he says, you can help me spread the message today. There is, of course, a lot we can learn from Nick. And well, that's why we sat down in studio. And I'm praying this conversation inspires you, and I'm praying that it encourages you. After our conversation, I will be giving you some of my follow-up thoughts and also giving you some questions that you can discuss as a team. And I also want to share something from our friend Tom Rayner. He put out recently about 8 warning signs of a financially dying church. And that'll be good for us to review as we obviously all seek to grow in that area as well. Well, without further ado, here is my conversation with Nick Vujicic. Enjoy. Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us here on the Leadership Momentum Podcast.
My pleasure, Chris. Hello to everyone.
Yeah, I want to ask you some questions about, you're known for evangelism, you're known for speaking all over the country, but a lot of folks don't really pay attention. You're leading a major organization. And so I just want to ask you a few leadership questions, if you're open to it.
Sounds good. I mean, we look sort of major, and the impact is major for the kingdom. We praise God for that. But we're a little humble team of seven.
Uh-huh.
And so I just don't want people to think we've got... But it is a big organizational level. Yeah, so thank God for that. And anything I can do to plant a seed of wisdom or help along the way, I'm always learning. Yeah. But anything that I've learned that I can share, I'm always willing.
Well, right there was a lesson in on being thin-staffed. You don't staff more than you need to. Make sure that you put them to work. You want to get 110% out of their 100% and make sure they stay motivated and fulfilled in the same time.
Which is something sometimes one of the hardest things to do.
Mm-hmm. How do you keep motivated?
Oh, my Lord. When you fix your eyes on the fruit, I think one of the greatest wild cards that I've been given, okay, I have no arms and legs, but a great wild card is every time I get up and speak, and you see people crying, mm-hmm. and you see Jesus touch their heart in an authentic way, that is more than enough motivation to see people receive the treasures of heaven and a personal relationship with Him. And no matter what that costs, no matter what that looks like, I'm ready. That's what I said since 19. Mm-hmm. And it's been now 3 million miles, 61 countries, 15 presidents and prime ministers, and then them inviting me to go on mainstream TV to preach the gospel to 80% of their country at one time, including Russia this year, 180 million people. So by the grace of God, 10% of the world has heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. So motivation, number one. Number two, my wife and family, they motivate me.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful life that we have. Not always easy. Mm-hmm. In fact, not easy most of the time.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, whatever God's called you to do, He will always give you sufficient grace and wisdom and people around you who can speak into you and discerning, what's going on and helping you with action steps.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned seven people, and I think about who's listening in. There's lead pastors listening in. There's kind of middle management or like campus pastors and executive pastors. And then you've got some ministry leaders listening in who they might be leading seven volunteers or three staff and seven volunteers or 10 volunteers. You said one of the major motivators to keep you motivated and them motivated is results, is really, here's what's happening. Speak to that ministry leader today who has got maybe 7 or 10 people that they're leading, but they're in a season right now with no results.
God would never have taken me around the world to be His mouthpiece of evangelism until I was ready to be faithful with the little. Mm. When I was walking my dog tied to my wheelchair, and he'd sometimes pull me faster than I want to go, there'd be strangers who'd come down the street, and God prompts me, talk to them about me, talk to them about me. Mm. And until I said yes to the one, he wouldn't take me to the millions. There is a story of a missionary who went to India for 40 years, knocking on door to door to door to door, telling them about Jesus. Not one soul came to Jesus Christ while he was alive. However, when he died, the next wave of evangelism that happened across those very doors, they all said yes. They had a church planted in every single valley and village and mountain and city that he went through. And he wasn't here to see that. So continue to keep up the good fight, because you don't know what God can do with those seeds, whether it's a week after you're gone, not even just gone, but you don't know what God can do. But you got to do the planting. And that's your job.
Yeah.
You can't take care of the growing, but you do your job in planting, and God does the growing.
You're in churches here in the States and churches all over the world all the time. What's your vibe on, do you feel like once you get into church leadership that we're still doing a good job of that door-to-door, of taking advantage of those opportunities? And
I first of all, I tell members, it's not really at the leadership. I think what we got to understand is we're a family. Right, every church is a family, and I tell church leaders, and I tell church members that the rate at which your church doubles in membership is not solely based on how well the leadership is in a church or how well the pastor preaches, as much as it is dependent on people understanding that as a member of the church, they need to bring unsaved people through the doors and let God speak to them. Why aren't they there? Well, because we already assume they're going to say no. Well, when was the last time that you've actually invited one family to church? Have you ever invited 20 families to church? It's interesting that even the most hardcore atheists, when they're going through something difficult, they're searching.
Yeah.
And they'll never kick back on an offer of prayer. When was the last time you ever prayed for a stranger? That person at the cashier, you don't know if she just witnessed her dad verbally abusing her mom and this teenager actually blames herself for it. You don't know every opportunity. And so every engagement is an opportunity for the glory of God. Whether you use the J word or not, you preach the gospel by how you live, showing how you love. But literally, I think there is power in unity. Not only think I know, that's what we know, that that's the truth. I also understand why some churches don't work with other churches. I also understand why churches don't always opt in a stadium thing with other churches, because you want an ROI for your own church. We are privileged to be an evangelistic ministry, and I think God's going to force us in unity. Some people say because of persecution, and that may happen like never before, but really, I think it's the use of technology. Mm-hmm. We're about to engage more than 4,000 churches across 4 weeks of evangelism, 6 nights in a row sort of model of outreach, because we saw so much success of doing six nights in a row, and a church of 1,400 saw 12,000 people walk through their doors in 6 nights and saw 1,414 decisions for Jesus Christ. Half of them went through the follow-up, half of them stayed in church. That church grew by 20% in a week. Not $1 was spent on stadiums, not one. It was the church understanding, this is a week for me to really put on that mantle of sharing Jesus. And they invited 10 people. They prayed for 10 people on a list for 18 months, 12 months before they invited them. It is the power of engaging the community like never before. Not just loving people, but actually inviting people to the church, holding an evangelical outreach opportunity that's effective. And then when your church sees as many members there are at the church, that many new decisions for Jesus Christ in a week, it kind of expands your faith.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I hear a lot when it comes to ministry, especially in the Western world, is this whole idea of burnout. And you're talking about evangelism, you're talking about praying for people, you're talking about inviting saved people into the doors. Doesn't that help with burnout? Doesn't that, like, when you see results and you see people taking these steps of faith and you see lives changed, it's not necessarily about an energy thing. Like, you know, it's when you start to see people take these steps. I mean, I think about you. I think about how involved you are, how busy you are, but you've got this energy about you, and it's because of results, isn't it?
Look, results help, but it's number five in the top five.
Okay.
Results is number five, and that helps me. Number one is my own relationship with God. Mm-hmm. If I don't take 15 minutes with God, I am running on empty, and you can only run on empty for so long. Mm-hmm. As a 33-year-old man, there are weeks where that goes by. I don't have that 15 minutes. I'm just about to jump on a plane to Germany, China, Singapore, Philippines, and Malaysia all in 8 days, speaking 11 times, probably, I don't know, 6 different time zones. I run so fast to leave my legs behind. But every day, there is either a worship song that's in my head or a verse that I can meditate on to get me through that. So number one is my relationship with God. Number two is my family. And I don't know what 3-4 is, but it's definitely, to me, not just results. It's about seeing also other people grow around you. As a leader, I think even more than results of how many people are there, more important than results of how many people are at your church is seeing the maturity and growth of the leadership around you, mm-hmm. for real. And people taking the reins of their responsibility like you would if you were them. And that is a great method of a barometer of leadership. I'm trying to come up with a fourth, but I don't know what that is.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of times it's really just how you measure results. What are the results that are important?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because those things that you just mentioned, if those are your results,
you're right.
Man, that's huge, right?
Yeah.
But if your results are just the numbers of people who sit in a seat or the amount of giving or the amount of people serving, you will come up empty because I agree. Definitely number 5, maybe 6, maybe 7, maybe 8. But very, very good stuff. How can the church support you? I mean, we value your ministry, everything you're doing. How can we, the church leaders, support you?
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Make sure that if the results of offering ever supersedes anything of the top 4 or 5 that we just said,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was discouraged when we were backstage at a church and they had a couple people pray and 2 of their members both prayed that their offering for the church, it wasn't going to our ministry, but the offering for their church would be great. And I felt like vomiting.
Mm.
I'm like, is that why we're here? Like, why did we have to even pray that once, let alone
twice?
And I'm like, wow. So I just want our faith with God, our walk with Him, our family, the people around us, how we do things, then the number of people coming to Jesus and discipling. And when you do all that,
yeah.
Dude, the money's there.
Yeah, exactly. God's
never poor.
Yeah.
And so...
so good.
It's good. By the grace of God. So how can people help us?
Yeah.
We literally... are going through, we've never been good at asking people for money.
Mm-hmm.
We've never really sat down and for the last 10 years, 600 million souls heard the gospel, 600,000 gave their life to Jesus Christ out of 6 million face to face. And many millions gave their life to Jesus, but we've never really sat down and said, okay, what are we doing for the next 10 years? So we've got that now. We would love for people to sign up for our newsletter, go on social media, be fed with some daily bread 3 times a week that's coming up. The links will be on your website, I'm sure, of the Facebook link would be great. But definitely, we're praying for 40 business people to give a grand a month and 50 churches to slot us in on their missions budget. If that's not possible by any of your listeners, please pray. Pray for more favor, for more expansion, and for more unity in the churches. We are very thankful to be speaking to some heads of denomination about engaging thousands of churches for a wave of evangelism in 2017. We are actually praying for 3 million Americans across 4,000 churches, 6 nights in a row, to actually hear the gospel in a church building, and we typically would see 10% of that. So 300,000 souls in America within the four walls of a church building, by the grace of God, Lord willing, will give their life to Jesus Christ and enter an active relationship with Jesus. I just want to lastly say that as important as evangelism is, so is discipleship. Don't give your members false hope.
Yeah.
Don't tickle their ears just with stuff that you think they're going to want to hear, but give them real bread and not just hoping for the next season, embracing the season now. God has given us more than enough.
Yeah.
He's given us Jesus Christ. He's given us His Holy Spirit. So rich or poor, it doesn't matter. I'm complete. Now, if I do my best, God will do the rest. Trust in Him one day at a time, and don't be afraid to look at what your discipleship growth looks like and your model in your church. Don't be afraid to check, is there anything I can do better? Because that is the best stewardship. As a church leader, as a pastor, that is one of the biggest questions that I believe God will ask every pastor. My dad's a pastor. He's done 3 churches. I'm a PK. Talk about a disability as well. All right.
Yeah.
Can I leave you with last one thing?
Please. Mm-hmm.
There was a missionary in South Africa who years ago was evangelizing, but there were no churches who were doing good discipleship back then. This is talking 50, 60 years ago. I don't even remember the name, but a story I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
God said, stop evangelizing. and plant a church because you're killing my kids.
Mm.
And he's like, what? He said, stop evangelism. What do you mean? He took him into a dream. He's in a dream on the streets of South Africa. He hears a baby cry. He sees a cardboard box. He looks in the cardboard box with umbilical cord and still blood all over, a newborn baby left on the side of the road, taken out of the car, and the car left. And he said, this is what you're doing to my kids. They find me, they get reborn, but then they're left to starve.
Mm.
We must feed the flock.
Yeah.
And so keep feeding it. Don't be discouraged. I know the behind the scenes of every pastor's home on many levels. Don't be discouraged. Be faithful with your walk with Jesus first, your family next, and then everything else will fall into place if you got those first two things going on.
And powerful words from Nick today. Just, we're very thankful for your heart and thankful for your time.
I love you. I'm praying for this country. May God bless every person who's listening to this. Go to lifewithoutlimbs.org for any more information. And if your church would like to engage with Life Without Limbs, we have on file 30,000 invitations for me to speak. Now, being a husband and a father, we're doing simulcasts. So if your church, your youth group wants to participate in any of the simulcasts happening in 2017, please email us there. God bless you, and thank you, Chris, for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I've got to tell you, the fact that Nick doesn't have any limbs, it didn't really hit me until we had to work as a team to actually get him settled here in the studio. A lot of the time we say, the struggle is real, right? It's something that's out there right now. Oh, the struggle's real. The struggle's real. But it really isn't real in our lives until you realize what we had to do to help Nick take a sip of water. To what to do to help him to put on his headset. That's where the struggle's real. That's where it's at. So there's so much gold in that conversation when it comes to motivating our team. Some good questions to ask your leadership team, okay? Whether you're leading a church, whether you're leading a campus, a ministry, or another type of organization, what are the desired results? What are they? He said results are very inspiring, very motivating. What are they? Are they the right results? Are they what you really want or what you feel pressured to want? Are they measurable? Are they specific? Do these results have a time limit? Most importantly, are they in writing? Do they stare you in the face? Do they keep you accountable? The best times that I ever had, these goals and results, the best thing that I ever did is I had these goals staring at me. They were on my desktop, my screensaver. They were on the refrigerator. They were above the copier. They were on the corner of my desk. I mean, they were in my journal. They were everywhere. Are your goals for the next level of results, are they in writing? And have the goals been clearly communicated? And are they broken down into these smaller bite-sized victories so the team can latch onto them? And not only for your motivation, but for the team's motivation as well. It's a great conversation there about results and motivation, keeping the team inspired. When it comes to engaging the community or, you know, whatever it is in your denomination, however you term, you know, the terminology you use, witnessing, inviting, sharing your faith, you know, are we doing it? Are we actually doing it? One of the things I've noticed in speaking with churches, many of your churches all over the country, is there's no solid direct correlation between dollars spent on marketing and growth. There's no solid direct correlation between dollars spent on marketing and church growth. The churches that are being the most effective in reaching new people all around the country, they're creating raving fans in the seats who can't stop talking about what they're experiencing in their community, in their church. The number one marketing tool in almost every industry is word of mouth, but especially in the church. And if you find yourself having to beg people to pass out invite cards, don't get discouraged. All you need to do is just pull up and ask yourself, what do we need to change as a team to move people from having to getting to? Well, they have to hand out invite cards, but and share their faith, but they get to. What do we have to do? And a good barometer of, you know, regarding people's get to factor is to spontaneously ask your leadership team one day. You're in leadership meeting and just spontaneously ask them. These are the leaders. These are the ones that are supposed to be the best. And say, hey, how many people have you invited? How many people have you invited to either participate in our ministry or attend our ministry or attend our church? Ask them. And ask yourself, too. And not in a mean way. Not in a, I've got you. I'm trying to catch you. But in a very proactive accountability way. This works in almost every context. Whether we're talking about church attendance, whether we're talking about salvations, ministry, volunteers, giving units, you name it. It really comes down to how much or how little we're verbally evangelizing a certain discipleship initiative or activity. And systems are great. I'm all for systems. But our churches never get too big for opening our mouth. The churches never get too big for opening our stinking mouth. The churches of, there's a church listening in right now. 40,000 people. You're listening in, right? Yep. That's just 40,000 mouths. That's what it is. Just, you've got to, the biggest evangelistic tool is the actual word of mouth of people in the seats. We talked about burnout. We've heard a lot about this lately, so I'm not going to hound on it a lot, but we can't overemphasize enough the importance of that real everyday interaction with the sustainer, with our Savior, that day-to-day, everyday interaction. We have to have that real daily connection. And we know that, but we have to do it, right? James 1:22 says that not to be hearers of the word, but to be doers. Okay, we can't just hear that. Okay, we know. No, we got to do it. Otherwise, we're going to be part of that stat, you know? Speaking of stats, side note here. Please don't buy into the fact that burnout is only a problem at a certain size church. It's not true. It's really not true. High-profile people, they throw the stat off, and you think, oh my goodness, this is happening in just one size church. I'm someone who talks to pastors all around the country and leaders in all different industries. The bottom line is, no matter what size ministry, we have to stay connected to our why. And in our context, in the church, our why is Jesus. And we have to have a team around us also that takes weight off of us, not put weight on us. If you've got a team around you, no matter what your capacity is at the church, and they're putting weight on you, creating drama or not hitting deadlines, it's the wrong team, or there needs to be some kind of sit down and come to Jesus meeting, right? So we got to be connected to our why. We've also got to have a team around us that takes weight off. And we have to also learn how to release a little bit of control. During those growth stages, you got to release more and more control by empowering others. That's how we avoid burnout. And large churches have more pressure. Yes, higher profile, more eyeballs looking at you. But you know what? They also have more resources. They have more team. And there are a lot of things they don't have to worry about that church planners and small churches do have to worry about. So we all just have different pressures in every industry. I'm thinking about, come on, man. You know, come on, man. Oh, that's just how I feel. But anyway, so those are some of my thoughts regarding the subjects that we covered in our conversation. Again, I pray that it was encouraging to you. Speaking of pressures at every size church, there is one pressure that stands out more than any of them, and that is finances. And our friend Tom Rayner, president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources, he recently put on his website, you might have seen it, tomrayner.com, the 8 signs of a financially dying church. And I thought that we'd just take a minute to discuss them right here. My prayer is that this will challenge you a little bit, but not discourage you in any way. It's just a challenge. And if you're a leader, you like being challenged. We won't be perfect in any of these things, but the goal is to strive for progress, not perfection. So these 8 things are 8 signs of a financially dying church. Okay. And just kind of ask yourself the questions. How are we doing in these things? One of them is took on too much debt, right? You feel this incredible amount of pressure. So therefore it makes you feel a little bit desperate. And because you feel desperate, you make different decisions. Another one was not being transparent with the finances. Okay, and of course, I'm not a person that wants to go line by line in the budget on a Sunday morning. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about having a culture of transparency. Everyone doesn't need to know what everybody's making. I'm not saying that, but there needs to be a culture of transparency. There needs to be the culture of hiding stuff needs to not be in the air. Another one is used very few dollars to reach and minister to the community. How much, let's say you have a $2 million budget, how much that $2 million actually goes towards real ministry? Or is it going towards debt service? Or is it going towards a really, really fat staff and you're paying 60, 70% of your budget on staffing? I don't know. But that is a sign of a financially dying church. Got to have as much dollars as possible pointed towards actual, again, going back to results. Another one is do not have multiple options for giving. I think most of us are doing well on that. You got the giving kiosk, you got something on the web, you got text to give, you've got all these different options. It's a convenience culture, and we got to make sure that we're speaking their language operationally. Another one is did not constantly evaluate how funds were spent. This is just basic stewardship 101. You've got to evaluate the budget. What is the ROI? What is the return for the amount of time spent? How much money was spent? We want to make sure that we're checking that stuff out. Another one is never took wise steps of financial faith. Okay, this whole idea of wisdom and faith, they kind of intersect. They're not faith and finances are not two opposing ideas. They go hand in hand. They intersect. And faith and finances should be in the same sentence, not separate sentences. Another one is the church relied on a few big givers. Right? You know if you do that or not. In the back of your head, yeah, but we still have John or we still have Susie. They're still giving six figures. Be careful of that. Okay? Don't rely on a few big givers. We want to make sure that we are cultivating a culture of stewardship and generosity in everybody, not just a few. And then the last one was failed to preach and teach stewardship. So again, I'm hoping that that can spark some growth-oriented conversations with your leadership team as you ask yourself questions about these areas. Obviously, I'm very passionate about stewardship. I am on a quest. My big goal in life is to make sure there's a stewardship ministry in every church. There's a stewardship ministry in every church, led by somebody paid or non-paid. But there is an organized effort to help people with their finances, the number one thing holding the church back, personal finances. Because people are intentioned for ministry, but not positioned for ministry. And being intentioned for ministry is nothing without being positioned for ministry. So that's my goal. My goal is that everyone would have a stewardship ministry somehow, either revitalized one that's dead or build one from scratch. So I share those with you, not in a spirit of condemnation, but with the motive of trying to manage the leadership that God's entrusted us with God's way and for God's glory. And I hope that encouraged you. Obviously, it's no secret that here at Ramsey Solutions, we specialize in these things that we talked about, stewardship and helping churches with finances. And of course, we're here to help. We see all kinds of church budgets every day, all year long. And we would love to be a free resource to you as you continue to plan for 2017. So don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Again, that's chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. And just ask me, here's where we're at. What would you suggest? And I'd love to help. Or you can reach out on social media at chrisbrownonair and all social media handles. I could respond there as well. I'll either help you personally or I'll point you towards one of our 600 staff, folks that can help you at a much deeper level than I have the time and bandwidth to do so. But just reach out to me. That's your next step. And we can go from there. And one last thing to mention, mark your calendars for May 2017. Join me at this year's Stewardship Conference. We'll have all the details for you in our January episode of Leadership Momentum Podcast and also at stewardshipcentral.org. Well, leaders, as always, it has been a pleasure. I sincerely hope that you guys have a great Christmas. I hope your Christmas services go very smoothly. You get some good downtime with your friends and with your family. And please know that I'm here as a resource and as a friend. God bless.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. If you'd like to learn how other leaders are reclaiming biblical stewardship, head over to stewardshipcentral.org. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his daily radio show and podcast, Chris Brown's True Stewardship, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following @ChrisBrownOnAir. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us here at the Leadership Momentum Podcast.